Aren't you interested in learning breakthrough wealth building strategies, such as how to flip a home in less than 2 weeks using other people's money with no real estate license, or how to build a low-cost home-based business? You can discover how to take passive income from any source and invest it into real estate, stocks, or business to become financially independent investing in any market with Residual Roads Business Institute. Collaborate with Andre and other Residual Roads advisors to create a free action plan and start implementing strategies today. Go to www.residualroads.com or email info@residualroads.com. Welcome to the Investing Uncensored podcast. You've been searching for different ways to become financially independent or generate passive income to live out your life's purpose as you've seen others do it, but need insight on how. Well, get excited because here you'll discover the tips and resources to fulfill that need. Andre Stewart has spent more than a decade successfully making it happen for himself and others. This is the Investing Uncensored podcast. And now here's your host, Andre Stewart.
Welcome to Investing Uncensored. I'm your host, Andre Stewart. And today we're going to bring a great guest to you guys. He has a private equity firm that started out actually in multifamily real estate, but now they're branching out into other areas, which is a smart idea. You know, once you make a lot of capital from real estate, you got to start moving into other things. So today I want to bring you guys Brunson Hill. He is the managing member of Brunson Equity. How you doing, Brunson?
I'm good, Andre. Great to be here, man. We're both Southern Cal guys, so great to chat. And we survived the storm here recently.
I know. Let's talk about that real fast. You know, people know about Hurricane Hillary passing through, and we don't get that many hurricanes in California. But on the side that I am in, it wasn't that bad. But what about what happened in Pasadena?
It was pretty chill. There's memes going around online that says, you know, the devastating hurricane of, you know, 2023. And it's like a chair is knocked over and with a caption that says, "We will rebuild," you know, kind of thing. Where it's, so, I mean, compared to the people on the East Coast and, you know, the Southeast, like we really don't have anything, you know, it rained, you know, 3 inches of rain, but there's a couple of branches that fell down, but it wasn't much. So
it's funny because I grew up in Florida, right? So When I saw a hurricane coming to California, I was like, man, it's not going to be a hurricane. It might be just another rainy day, like typical, right? You know, I mean, some parts of Mexico got hit pretty bad, but that makes sense, but not Southern California. So I thought it was funny that they were like, you know, schools were closed and it was all kind of stuff going on around the hurricane.
It's funny too. I think that, well, I just, the news, you know, is good at dramatizing everything that making it bigger than it needs to be just because they want eyeballs, really.
Exactly. But real quick, how'd you get into, you know, the multifamily space? Because I know you mentioned that being the best way to go if someone's looking to get into real estate. So tell us a little bit about your background and what made you get into multifamily.
Yeah, so I started like a lot of people. I wanted to become financially free through real estate. So I started buying single family houses originally. And I just realized it was a lot of work. It didn't really turn out the way I wanted, even though it was great on paper. There were always issues with tenants. There were issues with the management. There were repairs. And it just really didn't work the way I was hoping. And so a lot of people, I think we were familiar with single family. And so I had a relative I hadn't seen in years who I told him I planned to get, you know, 30 houses and retire from a medical sales job. So I was making really good money. And he's like, you know what, that just sounds like a lot of work. Why don't you do multifamily apartments? And I was like, well, I'd love to, but I don't have the money. He said, well, mm-hmm. You can raise the money. And so he taught me about syndication, learned about raising money, started a meetup in Pasadena, California, where I live, and met my first investor there. And then within a couple of years, I had raised about $15 million and was getting ready to leave my corporate job. So now it's been 4 or 5 years I've been doing this, left my corporate job a couple of years ago. But a lot of times, this is a side note, a lot of times we want, people think, hey, I want financial freedom, but really what we want is time freedom, right? We don't want just simply, hey, you know, I've got all the money in the bank. We want to be able to have enough money covering expenses. And that's why I think cash flow is such a compelling thing, especially these days where, you know, there's not a lot of cash flow in a lot of investments. So we focus on cash flowing investments, particularly outside of real estate right now, and just any opportunity that makes sense.
You mentioned having your job and, you know, syndicating. So let's dive into that really fast, because a lot of people think you have to quit your job and just dive into being an entrepreneur, which is like the dumbest idea ever, right? You're supposed to use your revenue because you need revenue for a business. So technically you use the money that you have coming in from your job and you build that business into the place of where it can potentially surpass your expenses. So you can be full-time. Like you said, you have time, but the ultimate goal is to have your cash flow coming in to be able to surpass your expenses. That's financial freedom, basically. So when you said that you got into real estate, did you syndicate first and get those deals going? Or did you have enough money to leave and then start syndicating?
I didn't have enough money to leave initially. I could have maybe survived for a year or two just with savings. But, you know, that's where I told my relative, I said, hey, I don't have the money, so you can raise the money. So, what, you know, in the process of syndication, people either, there's two ways to participate. One is you have money and you participate passively, or you have enough cash flow or enough, you know, high net worth, things like that. I didn't have that. So I had a good income, but I didn't have a lot of savings. And so much cash flow coming in. So I started investing. I also started bringing other investors to it. And the amazing thing is when you raise money, you get a piece of the deal. So you get an acquisition fee. Typically you get a piece of the performance going forward. That's really what allowed me to scale so quickly. So my net worth went from not a lot to, you know, seven figures over a period of, you know, several years. And so, but I think that process where, while I was still doing my full-time job, I was, you know, a couple of years, I was basically doing both. I was hustling, right? I was working hard at my job, and I was also doing a lot of real estate. And I had, over an 18-month period, I had a 1,000 one-on-one phone calls with high net worth investors that were interested in investing in our deals, and had a partner who had a big, kind of a big network. So we just kind of worked together. That's the amazing thing about syndication, particularly multifamily, is it's really a team game. It's not like I had to have all the experience, or I had to know everything, how to do it, everything, single thing. I had partners that were very experienced, great asset management, great at finding deals, and I could bring my skills of sales and talking with people and getting them qualified into the right deal. So it's kind of cool that it's much more of a team sport, I found, than single family in particular.
So then, with that being said, did you exit with enough money in the bank to where you didn't have to work anymore, or you exited with enough to be like, this is going to keep me afloat?
Yeah, so it's a good question. People wonder, like, when do you leave your job, right? Some people like are in debt, or they take out a loan to go like do a mentor program, and they just like burn the boats and quit their job immediately. And other people are like 1 month short of retirement, right? And they're like, I quit my job with financial freedom. And you're like, well, you're almost there. It's hard to know what that is. What I did is I waited until I had my, you know, called the rat race number, right? The idea of like, what are my annual expenses, which I live pretty simply, at least at the time I was living pretty simply. So it was maybe 60 or 70,000 a year. And I just figured, okay, if I can get, you know, 5-6K a month, then that's the point where I know that I'll be okay. And I basically got to that number, and then I continue to build on it. But I realized, like, from that point, I could choose, do I want to go do this job or do I not? And I think that's the thing, whether somebody's active or they're passive. And we work with a lot of passive investors. Even as a passive investor, somebody's got a business, they're a physician, they make a lot of money at their job. But if they stop working, what happens, right? They stop getting paid. And so this is a way that people can continue to have cash flow coming in. And I think what's more important than whoever anybody invests with or what asset they invest in is learning the skill of being a passive investor, right? Because then you have a tool that you didn't know you had, that you can generate cash flow unlike anything you've seen in the stock market or bonds or annuities or any of that stuff. So to me, I waited till I had it. Then I waited about, I was right about COVID that happened, where I was actually getting ready to leave my job that month. And then COVID happened and I was upset. I was like, oh man, what's this going to do to real estate? So I held on for about another year, a little over a year. And it was probably good I held on, but it ended up being fine and it all worked out. And we kept raising more money and doing more deals. So
for clarification, did you use any of your own money when you first jumped out there, or you raised the money because you had good deals?
My first deal, I raised $100,000 from a investor I had met at the meetup. I didn't have a deal, but he said, hey, I'd do one of your deals. And I was like, okay, I guess. So I didn't put any of my money into that one. Every deal since then, I put money in, whatever I have available. When you're doing, you know, 6 or 8 deals a year, it's hard. I don't have like millions of dollars on the sidelines just to like put in every deal, but I put something in. Maybe it's 10K, maybe it's 50K. You know, it depends on the deal. Typically it's between 25 and 50K, but I'm usually putting some money in. And I think it gives investors, a lot of investors ask, well, are you putting money in the deal? How much are you putting in? I'll say, well, this is my situation. This is what I put in. And, you know, the challenge is when you do more deals, you have a lot of net worth. It's just in different deals. And it's not always available when you're looking to do a new deal.
And it's funny, I talk about this in a real estate investing diet. One of the examples that I gave is like, you put this way, split equity in, and you, since you run a meetup group, you can probably elaborate on what I'm about to say. I always talk about getting a good deal. And if you have a good deal, you can almost go to any real estate investment club or any meetup and someone will buy that deal. If it has enough equity, you don't have to do anything but sell the piece of paper, sell the contract. It's basically wholesaling. But from your standpoint of you running a REIT or a meetup group, please explain what I mean by that. Bringing in a deal, saying, hey, I got a deal. It has $75,000 worth of equity. You have it on the contract and you know you're going to flip that paper for like 10 or 15 grand. So am I right about that? Would you take, does that happen in your meetup group?
Yeah, it absolutely happens. Our meetup's a little more focused on larger multifamily. So it's a little harder to wholesale. There are people that do it. It's a little harder to do it on properties that are 100 units or more, or 50 units or more or something. But people do it, especially on smaller stuff. But yeah, what we have found, I mean, it's really, it's a team game, right? So in that situation you describe, somebody's got a deal and they don't have the money to do it. So they'll be willing to sell it. They'll be able to get some value out of selling that contract to someone else. Exactly. Well, it's the same thing that we do. It's just like when I mentioned that first investor that saw me in the front of the room, hey, I'd invest in one of your deals. And being a sales guy, it was kind of like paying attention to what people think and they want and whatever. I was like, okay, well, let's get some coffee. So I got some coffee with him. And before I did that, I connected with another guy at that same meetup and he had a deal that looked pretty good. And I was like, hey, are you looking for money for this? And he said, yeah. So I said, okay, well, so I kept that in mind. And I showed this guy I met with a sample deal and it was similar to the one that this other guy had. And then I was able to connect those two, right? So a lot of times we think, again, we have to do everything, but maybe you're really great at networking with brokers or finding deals or some things you can do. You can do that within the multifamily space, within the single family space, within short-term rentals, whatever it is. Or if you're really great at talking with people and building relationships, you know, you can raise money. So there's different ways to really be able to do it. And because it's a team sport, there's opportunity. That's how people get paid, is for bringing value.
Exactly. It's funny because I've also said that you're going to get paid in direct proportion to the value that you bring to somebody. And that's the same thing. Like you see these multimillionaires, right? It's because look at Jeff, for instance, Jeff Bezos. He's almost a trillionaire, or Elon Musk, because look at the value that they bring to society. Not one or two people, 7 billion people that they're being able to affect, right? So that's why they're paid so well, because of the value that they bring to the world as a whole.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's really the thing I think I've learned over the years. With medical sales, it was true. I didn't have a job that you just punched a clock and it was this much for this many, you know, you get paid this much for so many hours. You really were trying to figure out how can you increase sales? And if I could sell $1 million additional worth of stuff, you get paid really well for that. And it's the same with the marketplace, right? If you can solve problems that people have, particularly people that are wealthy or people that, you know, there's a lot of value in just solving that problem. If you can find a way to do what Elon Musk has done or what Bezos has done, is find ways to deliver goods or, you know, electric cars or other things in a way that just nobody else is doing, people will pay really well for that. And so it's the same in investing. It's just like, hey, can we deliver an experience that is great communication, it's great performance, it delivers what we say we're going to do, we're going to have this long-term relationship with investors. If we can do that, we're going to have more business than we know what to do with. And it's grown up. We've raised, I think, about $36 million now the last 4 or 5 years. Yeah, that's just kind of how business works, right? If you're somebody who's reliable and you provide value, people will definitely pay for that.
They will pay for it. And it's funny because, again, I'm a lender as well. And so like a lot of times people will go, like there's not a shortage of hard money lenders, right? But it's the expertise and the experience that I provide in the customer service why people come back and they're willing to pay an additional point than they would somewhere else, because they're getting every single thing that they need from me, whether it be me flipping on properties or commercial or multifamily units and me giving them advice on how to structure the deal or whatever the case is. They're getting more than that from me than anybody else out there just who's willing to do a loan and not provide all the rest of that stuff that comes with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's it. You know, if you provide value, you go above and beyond, people will always pay for that, right? Because I've just learned, especially the more successful, the more you do, I don't want to pay to do everything. When I was younger, I was in college, I used to change my own oil and do my own brakes on my car. And I'm like, I will never do that stuff again, you know, because like, first of all, I don't want to do it. But, you know, I get paid way more to do other things that are in my wheelhouse. And if I can create more value in other areas, then you can pay for things that, you know, people can do for you, which is good. So figuring out kind of where you fit and what you provide the most value in, I think that's an incredibly important thing to figure out.
And to piggyback off what he just said, obviously you can do those same things. In the same way, there's a lot of things that I could do, but I run a business. And so these other people have businesses as well. So instead of me doing what I'm doing, I can pay another business to keep their business going by letting them do what they do at the same time. So you're stimulating the economy, you're helping the business grow. Just like you know how hard it is to get your business to grow, that person's trying to grow their business as well. So why not give them $150 to come clean your house or do whatever the case is, and you spend that time? Because if your time is worth $1,000 for an hour, I'm not going to spend an hour to wash my car or clean my place or anything like that when I could pay someone else to do it. You know what I mean? And help their business at the same time.
I think this is really true. And we see this a lot in our business. I have a book coming out. I know you're an author as well, but a book called Fire Yourself, Replace Your Working Income with Passive Income in 3 years or Less. And it's just this question of how much does somebody actually make an hour? It's important. Everybody kind of knows what their hourly rate is. I have some physicians I used to work with in the medical field. They'd make hundreds or thousands of dollars per hour. I mean, they'd make a lot of money. And so, you know, if I'm managing a small rental house portfolio, even if I'm not the manager, taking those calls or what should I do on the toilets, whatever, it just wasn't worth the stress. And it's not worth the stress for a lot of people. And it's really not scalable, right? If somebody's got two or three rental houses, they're taking calls here, there. Well, I tell them, well, if you can't 10X the current size of what you're doing, maybe go to 20 to 30 rental houses, which really is another job, then you're not really passive investing. And so I think there's a kind of a misnomer about passive investing that I can do single family, or I can do active stock trading, or I can do these other things, but it's not really passive investing because it's not scalable.
Correct. I agree with that 100%. So then with you saying that, what do you think the advantage is, or the unfair advantage is, to investing in multifamily versus someone doing single family?
Yes, that's a good question, Andre. I think a lot of, like, kind of I share with my story, a lot of times we think single family is going to get us to financial freedom. And there's just very few stories where that actually happens. If you look at people's kind of testimonials or how they get to financial freedom, it's usually not through single family. If it is, it typically takes 10 to 20 years. And so you can basically kind of do that parallel to your job and just be having this side thing. But like, I want to be a great dad, or I've got a daughter. I want to be present. I want to be available. I don't want to have another job. And so I think with multifamily, again, there's two ways to really approach it. One is as somebody who raises money like we do, or we're doing deals, we're doing private equity deals, different things like that, which is more on the operations side. Or you can do it from the, hey, I've got money. I've got, you know, 2 million or more, and I'm looking to passively grow my wealth, and so that I can replace income, so that I can live the lifestyle I want outside of Wall Street. And so if somebody's doing that, I think, you know, I just think it offers a much better, more efficient asset within multifamily. And then, you know, lately multifamily it's been hit a little bit with, you know, higher interest rates and higher costs and insurance and certain things like that. So I think, you know, diversifying into other assets too, I think is important. So I think just learn, I call it like a muscle, right? Like learning the skill of passive investing. You're not in control, you're not getting the calls, but you vet the deal, you vet the team. And then when you're invested, like if you're like me, you pay attention, right? You pay attention because you're invested, and you'll learn from your process of doing it. And, you know, if you can shoot for around 15% per year in passive returns, I mean, that's pretty good. You know, your money would double about every 5-7 years. You know, that's pretty great, right? And you can actually have a pretty fair amount of allocation into alternative assets such as real estate and other things. And it's passive. I know people that are invested in, you know, over 40 deals. I know one guy that's invested in over 70 deals. I think it's too much, but just to chase all that down. But I think there's something there to really get into assets, you know, that are more scalable.
So you mentioned something about the economy and the cost of things being higher. One thing with inflation, it obviously has a great impact on single family houses, right? Inflation takes up, like for instance, I was looking at a house in Phoenix a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, it was $139,000. 7 months later, I looked back at the house, it was like $340,000, right? So that's because of the cost of inflation. With inflation, we know the effects of that on the single family market. What about multifamily? How's that working out with the inflation in the multifamily space? Because rents go up, obviously, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I wrote a guide on this for investors called How to Use Inflation to Your Advantage. It's a free download on my website at bronsonequity.com. It just gets into some unusual strategies to how you can actually, instead of being hurt by inflation, you're going to the pump and at the grocery store and everything costs more, and how do you get on the other side of that equation where it's actually benefiting you. So single family is typically the value of single family homes is based on comps. So if my house is up for sale, what the house across the street or down the block sells for recently, that will impact how much the house is worth. With multifamily, it's based on how much income is coming in. So one thing we can do is to try to add value. We come in, we do renovations, kind of like you when you flip a house, you're coming in and you're increasing the value. We do the same thing with apartments, but it's really, as you said, to increase the value of the rents. Now, some headwinds recently in 2023, especially, we've seen in Florida, some of the insurance costs they've had, you know, a couple, two or three big hurricanes the last few years. So those insurance costs have gone up, you know, 200-300%. So there's been a lot more costs there. There's been costs related to labor and materials going up 30-50%. And then also because interest rates are higher, it's actually reduced some of the valuation of multifamily apartments. And you might think I'm not bullish on multifamily apartments. I really am. I just think there's been some headwinds for deals that were done in the last couple of years in multifamily. So, you know, I think in general, you know, when you compare the two, I think, you know, inflation impacts both, not just from the price of how much things cost as far as a unit or what it's selling for, but it really impacts the performance. Because if you're counting on, you know, rents are where they're at, rents aren't rising as fast as inflation. I mean, they say officially, we're recording this late August, you know, 23, like they're saying inflation is 3%, but you know, I'm seeing inflation more like 10%, right? We're seeing it much higher than what they're officially reporting it at. So I think it's definitely important to consider, because all of your costs are going to continue to rise. And we think that's only going to continue.
That's a good point. One thing that I do feel like, and I'm not really in multifamily like that. Like I flip multifamily deals that people, like investors, to buy, but I'm not really in the space. I do a lot of single family. I know with single family, you can do a lot of, it has a lot of tax advantages, right? You can write off the depreciation for the rental. You can write off the rehab. You can write off the interest payments if you do it under LLC. There's different things that you can do with single family. What are some of the advantages? How can someone get their taxes to maybe even zero with real estate in single family and multifamily in your experience?
So yeah, there's some, just a little disclaimer. I'm not a tax, I'm not a CPA for a CPA, so no tax advice. But yeah, I've been able to reduce my taxable rate. I was making $200K a year and I was able to get it from a 25% total tax rate down to less than 1%. How I did that, there's an exemption called the real estate professional designation, which basically if you have a business that is in real estate or you're an agent or you do work around that and you kind of keep track of all that, either you or your spouse, then you can use depreciation against ordinary income. Now, it's only for real estate professionals. You can search this. It's the IRS real estate professional designation. You can search that. For other people that ordinary folks like, you know, have a business or a doctor, there's obviously deductions people can take from their business. But, you know, really there's kind of two buckets, right? So the ways as investment income grows, you can use depreciation over on this side, which only impacts investment income. So if you have gains over here, you sold a house, you made a bunch of money on a deal, you can use some of that depreciation. And what it allows you to do is either to, you know, defer the taxes to a future point or sometimes completely write off and just not, you know, eliminate those taxes for the future. We have a deal right now in the ATM machine space. We're partnered with the fourth largest operator of ATM machines in the country. And it has a different type of depreciation where it has 100% depreciation, but it allows you to take the depreciation and you never recapture it. So this is something that's an important point is if I have a apartment, you know, it typically depreciates over a 27 and a half year schedule. There's a schedule it depreciates over. You can bring forward a lot of that depreciation to year one through something called accelerated depreciation. And then when you sell in 5 years, typically you recapture the 22 and a half years that you didn't use. So you actually have to like go back and almost catch up and pay back what you paid for taxes. You're just kind of deferring. But with things like an ATM machine investment, all the money goes directly into ATMs. It depreciates to zero over 5 years. So we get to bring it forward. So you get all this cash flow from the investment and then you never have to recapture any depreciation. So it actually, for a lot of that income, it actually becomes tax-free because people are able to use the depreciation that they never recapture on that kind of deal. So that's kind of a unique investment. So we look for things like that are kind of unique that allow people to have those tax advantages and be able to reduce their tax basis.
Ever wished you had the opportunity to buy a stock like Facebook, Amazon, or Netflix before it went public or was able to get shares in companies like VC firms and angel investors? Well, here's your chance. Go to investfar.com/invest and reserve a position. For the next 1 to 3 months, InvestFAR is allowed a limited number of low-cost shares be available for friends, family, and its community per SEC regulations before it goes public. Imagine being able to 1,000x or 10,000x your investment, like the top 5%. With exclusive opportunities such as this, positions are limited and the window of time is short. Don't miss your chance. That's INV, as in Victor, estfar.com/invest.
I want to go deeper into that. So you're taking the money from the cash flow from the real estate and you're rolling it into an ATM machine. So are you guys avoiding the taxes on that cash flow? Like, how are you doing that? Because I know, again, with single family, you can do a 1031 exchange and get that money rolled over into another property if you identify within a certain amount of time. And that's how you can avoid paying taxes that way, or capital gains tax. How are you able to avoid that with what you just said, with being able to defer those funds into the ATM machine business?
Yeah, so it really, I guess the magic word, there's a couple things. One, if you're a flipper or a real estate agent, you really should be a real estate professional, because flippers are paying the highest amount of tax of anybody, especially if you're doing really well in flipping. Mm-hmm. Or if you're a realtor and you're a great realtor, because you're just paying really high tax rates on every single sale, short-term gains, all that stuff. But what that is, as a real estate professional, you can use depreciation in other areas. So depreciation could be from an apartment building. It could be from something like this, which is the ATM machines. It could be some other. A lot of people use laundromats for this reason, but it gives you all these tax losses. Now, again, most people can only use those losses against other gains. So an example of this would be, I made $100,000 on a multifamily deal, right? The deal sold. I put $100,000 in 5 years ago, and I get my $100,000 is worth $200,000. Well, I've got $100,000 taxable gain. Well, because that gain is there, it's for this calendar year. If I can offset that with $100,000 of other losses, then basically I've offset those gains from the losses that I have, right? So it's only for investment losses, unless you're a real estate professional, which means you can actually go against ordinary income, or if your spouse is a real estate professional. So a little bit technical, happy to set up a call with someone if they want to kind of explain that. Again, I'm not a tax advisor or anything, but we've seen a lot of people effectively do it, because depreciation is really the magic word. If you have depreciation works as like, even though it's not a physical loss, you haven't lost any money. People get a K-1 tax form at the end of the year showing I lost $80,000 on this $100,000 investment. Well, how is that, right? They didn't lose any money, but on paper, because of the depreciation, it shows they lost that money. And so that you can take that against other investment income and reduce your taxable income this year. Now, you may have to pay it in 5 years, whatever, but if you keep getting more depreciation, you can continue to kick that down the road. Or if you're a real estate professional, or you find other investments like the ATM fund that don't have any sort of recapture, it just gets much easier to be able to manage.
In essence, it's kind of like having multiple businesses, right? And if you're using investment income to fund these other businesses, you can write it off because you're actually not making money because these other five businesses are taking losses.
Exactly. Yeah. It's similar to that. It's basically another write-off that you would use, like if you had a business or you had something else, some way to write it off. It just gives you a way you can write down. And, when I started doing it, I realized for me making 200K, if I was able to become a real estate professional, which meant I would, spend a certain amount of hours in real estate, I'd have documented things that I would do, and I'd be able to get enough depreciation, I could basically make about 140 or 150,000, and it'd be the same as making 200,000. So I realized I didn't need to make as much money, and I'd actually keep the same or more money. So it's interesting. A lot of people don't realize that man, you got two spouses. I've seen this sometimes, especially in California, where the top tax rate is over 50%, including the state tax. It penalizes. Let's say you've got a couple and they're both physicians and they're making, $1 million a year. Well, they're paying sometimes, 40, 50% or more in taxes versus if one of them were to go part-time and then maybe part-time start doing some real estate and document all those hours and get depreciation, they could potentially dramatically reduce their income. So I actually watched a guy do this. His wife was a CEO of a Fortune 1000 company. He was actually in the medical field as well as a medical sales manager. And they found he's probably making 200K a year. And they found he would actually make more money by just simply managing and running the apartment buildings that he'd been buying over the last 10 or 15 years, just by becoming a real estate professional. His wife was absolutely shocked, but they got with a tax strategist and they were like, yeah, if he leaves, you'll actually keep more money. And it's just like, well, why is this, right? But the government offers incentives. We don't really call them loopholes. We call them incentives because they need things like affordable housing, right? They really need that. And when they do affordable housing, nobody wants to live in a government project, right? Because that's what, when the government does it, it ends up being not as nice. But when it's private industry, it can be great. Another one that I just want to mention this real quick, another incentive is in the energy space. So we do oil and gas deals. Sometimes there's some great tax advantages of investing in the oil and gas space also. So there's certain things like, getting energy or housing, the government is actually partnering with you on when you go after and help provide these things.
I always talk about people being, upset that people that have a lot of money don't pay taxes. And it's like, they're not doing it, right? They have a CPA or someone who's intelligent with the tax code that's doing it. So it's, for instance, I'll just do Trump because people always have an issue with what Trump does. And Trump, he's not the one that's not paying taxes. He has a CPA who's doing his job to figure out everything that you just said to make sure he doesn't have to pay taxes. So he's following what the incentive is that the government's saying that they don't want to do, but they will pay someone to do it. And that's why people don't pay taxes. They have a lot of money because they're following what the tax code says that the government wants to do, but they don't want to do it to the level of what a private company would do. And so they're like willing to give a tax break for that. That's why companies get an employee tax credit, because they need to stimulate the economy and the government can't give out jobs. So they'll give you an employee tax credit if you have a business. So there's different things that I think this misconception of people being upset because people aren't paying taxes, but the people that have regular jobs, they also try to avoid paying taxes. Do they not? Right. They try to figure out how to. And I always tell people, start a little LLC or do like a sole prop where you're selling like juice or Mary Kay. Right. Because now you have you're an independent distributor and now you can technically be like a small business where you can write that off. I'm not a CPA either, but these are different things that you find out over the course of time where you tell anybody just create an LLC to do something. And you'll be able to write things off if you have an LLC, like you just said. So it can be like, I don't have to have two jobs. I can just create this little LLC and sell protein shakes or Herbalife and write off my gas and write off my meetings, write off all of those different things. So you don't necessarily need two jobs. So that's a good point.
Yeah. Well, and it really is true. I think that there's a difference between tax avoidance, which is legal, which we should all try to pay as legally as little in tax as we can. And there's a reason why. I mean, real estate is an unfair asset class. It's like, you know, Andrew Carnegie 100 years ago said 90% of millionaires became so by investing in real estate, right? And that was when being a millionaire was like being a 100 millionaire. It was like being somebody who was really wealthy. Correct. And so we watched that. But so there's tax avoidance. Tax evasion is like a crime and you go to jail for, right? So there's differences between the two. And so I think that it's understanding, and it's almost every country of the world this exists, where you have incentives where when you do things that are on the government's agenda, affordable housing, energy, other sorts of things related to those, you're going to find you're not swimming upstream anymore. You're like, oh, this actually works for me. And so it's been really fun to see how that works when it works for you.
And we'll talk about really quick on the opportunity zones. I mean, that's a thing that's going on until I think 2026, where they're reducing your taxes if you invest in particular areas. So why would it not make sense to look up opportunity zones in your city and invest exactly where they're telling you that you're going to get tax breaks for? Right. You know what I mean? So the incentive is there. People just have to look and see what it is. If you don't want to look for it, then get a CPA that will help you do that. You know what I mean? Or listen to what we're talking about right now and don't reinvent the wheel. Like you said, Andrew Carnegie from thousands of years ago, basically, is telling people the same thing, right? Just hop into real estate. And you just mentioned 1,000 different ways on this podcast on how someone can basically get to zero with their taxes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a wonderful, it's a huge advantage that most people don't even know. I mean, honestly, being in California, you know, you're in California as well. Like a lot of people just think, hey, it's patriotic to pay lots of taxes. And, you know, there's a book called The Cash Flow Quadrant by Robert Kiyosaki. Yep. It just talks about like whatever quadrant you're in, that's what you're going to pay. So if you're an employee, or especially, you know, your employer, you're typically going to pay around 40% in taxes, up to 40%. If you're a self-employed, you'll pay up to 60% in taxes. That's a lot of the doctors, the high paid professionals are paying a ton in taxes. Then you go around the other side where you have the big business or the business owner, they typically pay about 20% in taxes. And the investor is typically zero. Typically they'll pay zero. And people think that's unfair, but almost every country of the world, Tom Wheelwright, who is kind of associated with these guys as well, talks about this. And he's like, if you want to change your tax, you've got to change your facts. So just to your point, if you start a business, even if it's a small business, you can find ways to kind of write things off. It allows you to pay less in taxes, which I think is a very noble pursuit.
It's like, you know what? No one wants to pay more than they have to, right? We're already out of here dealing with inflation, which is an invisible tax. So anybody, right, doesn't matter if you're super rich or poor or in middle class, you're trying to figure out the best way to keep as much money as possible and not pay it out. So you can't be upset that someone who has a bunch of money is trying to do the same thing that you're doing. They just have more money than you. That's just kind of what it is.
Absolutely. 100%.
I was a banker for 10 years. So I used to do with a lot of high net worth individuals too. And so, I mean, earlier in the podcast, you were saying that you dealt with about 1,000 in the beginning when you were syndicating. What did you learn from dealing with the high net worth people? And for me, I just knew that all these people that I dealt with were willing to, one of them offered me a job, right? Because I provide that much value to them as a banker. So what did you learn from dealing with high net worth people? Most of them want to be helpful and most of them want to invest. And most of them are really actually friendly and giving individuals. But what's your experience with that?
Yeah, it's amazing, you know, to have conversations like that, you know, with basically 1,000 people that were, you know, net worth on average 2 million and some were much higher. The amazing thing is, what really blew me away is that these were people, a lot of times there's this sense that, you know, people are all, you know, it's handed to you, right? You get money, people have money, they don't have money. Fidelity Investments came out with a study a couple of years ago and they said that 88% of millionaires are self-made.
Right.
I thought that was absolutely shocking, right? That 9 out of 10 basically they weren't handed it, you know, to them. And so a lot of the people I was talking with, they were very interested in learning. And there's this idea of financial education leading to growing your net worth. I mean, Brian Tracy and some other guys have said this too, that if you want to earn more, you've got to learn more. And so these guys, even though they were busy, a lot of them had jobs, they had businesses, they were high net worth. They were taking time out to learn about our investments because they wanted to learn. It wasn't just for the investment. It was like, I want to learn, how does this work? I want to understand this. And so that curiosity for learning how people make money is really a great thing. That was one thing. Another thing is just, we talked about tax advantages, looking for tax, you know, different ways to reduce taxes. Also just looking for great partners to be able to do deals with, right? So again, somebody who is not very well, you hear the story once in a while, somebody's, oh, my dad got into all this stuff and he did all these things himself, or he would fix things. He'd always be gone. He'd be managing real estate, but it'd be a terrible experience for the family because he was never home, right? He was always out doing stuff. versus a lot of these people are trying to figure out, how can I grow passively? How can I grow so that my wealth grows without taking up my time? And that's, I think, the biggest equation that most people would want. But yeah, I just was blown away, you know, to get on the phone and just really understand that, you know, it was basically the same types of problems, right? I make a lot of money. I'm trying to reduce taxes. How do I grow passive wealth? You know, or just learning, how do I learn about this type of investment? I've never done it before. So how do I do it? Everything sounds scary and you know, ridiculous until you actually meet people that have done it. And so that's why I suggest going to meetups and events and things like that, because you learn. So
what's the name of your meetup group?
So we have a meetup in Glendale, California, and it's called ITI. It's called ITI Education. So investor to investor, itieducation.org. And so we usually have the first Wednesday of the month, around 60 to 85 people show up. And then we have a live event coming up, Andre, in near LAX, actually, October 19th and 20th, called the Advanced Real Estate Investing Summit. Really excited about that. We've got Ken McElroy, Neil Bawa, Ferris Musa, a bunch of leaders in real estate and other alternative assets. You're going to be there. So expecting a couple hundred people to be there.
Send me the link. I literally, you know, live right there, right super close by there, like maybe like 5 minutes. So I will definitely show up.
Okay, awesome. I'll send it to you for sure.
Oh man, it's good information. A lot of times, you know, you go back to what the narrative that goes around with taxes and things like that. And you pointed out, like people always think that people that have a lot of money just got it. Like they just got it from someone died and left them a ton of money. And it's like this book called The Millionaire Mind. I read it when I was in my 20s, and it talks about, I think, like you said, 80%, used to be more, all generated their money on their own. None of it was handed, right? None of this, like Jeff Bezos, none of Elon Musk, none of these people got these money handed to them. They just created ideas that eventually were worth a lot of money. So majority of the millionaires, it's the same thing. Even it's funny, I just saw another stat the other day that said 30% of most millionaires in the US are women. Yeah. I didn't know that too. I was like, wow. So it's just not like it's not a man-driven society with people that comes to, like, you know, making millions.
Yeah, it's really, you know, a lot of times, as long as we think that, oh, I'm just never going to get there, or, you know, these are thoughts that come that really are kind of like almost a victim / entitlement, like either you're going to win the lottery or you're never going to be wealthy. That's a very disempowered, but that's where a lot of people live. I mean, they say people that are low income, they spend something like 10% of their earnings on lotteries, which is absolutely shocking. I mean, but they just, again, that's the only way they see to become wealthy, instead of meticulously reading books and listening to great shows like this and going to events and learning and how'd you do this and what happened here and whatever. And the more you do that stuff, the more you're like, huh, I could do that, or I learned this, I could share this, whatever. And you realize like it's not actually that hard. Mm-hmm. But most people would rather just say, oh, that's impossible. I got to win the lottery, or relatives got to die, or something's got to happen for me to become wealthy. But that's how a lot of people live. And it's unfortunate, because I think it's very attainable. It's not, you know, get rich quick, but it's get rich over time. And then also, you know, what sort of life and impact do you want to make with the wealth that you get? I think that's an important thing as well.
You know what? It's funny, because people think it's easy, right? I do a lot of different things, like the podcast. I've written 3 books. 2 of them are right now. Another one's coming out. I have a mobile app that makes it easy for people to invest remotely. Like that's out. So there's a lot of things that I'm doing, and people are like, so I'm building a software company and doing all these other things, and I'm also flipping houses, right? So if I'm living a certain way, I should be able to, right? Because of all the work that I'm doing. A lot of times from the outside looking in, people just see the lifestyle. So this one artist said, they see the glory, but they don't know the story. And so that's what I think the narrative is. It's like, then you know how the media is just making people seem a certain way, but it's like the work that people put in, and like me, mindset. Same thing you said. Mindset is a big part of it. And a lot of that stuff and the confidence that comes along with you thinking that you can be an investor becomes from knowledge, right? Comes from the amount that you taught yourself in education. So then you feel confident with doing it versus thinking, you know, this is too hard, or trying to take the victim mentality, like, oh, they, you know, because of generations, I can't do this and things like that. So what's your thoughts on mindset? Because you obviously had to have a certain mindset to get where you are, because you did have a job. And you took the steps to learn more about real estate to be able to leave your job. So piggyback off what I'm saying.
It's amazing to me how mindset is really the gap that will get you from here to there. You know, most of it's just believing that you can do it. Because when you show up and you actually start saying, hey, this is who I am, this is what I do, this is what I can do for you. If you believe it, you know, people respond, the world responds. It's just amazing how everything, you know, the world kind of gets out of your way. Okay, this person's serious. They're going to do it. Tony Robbins, I'm a fan of. He says about 80% of life is just psychology, getting the right psychology. Yep. And he also, for me, this was a big change for me. He says, he's another quote, in your moments of decision, it's in your moments of decision that your destiny is shaped, right? So any decision you make, it does have over time an impact in your destiny. Where are you headed? What are you doing? You take that from a spiritual level to a physical, to a career, to all these different levels. So when I decided, hey, in 3 years, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to leave my job. I'm going to figure that out. Well, in less than 3 years, almost the month, I left my job. It was 1 month before my 3 years that I had decided that. So I think that, you know, again, it's super powerful to get around people that are at the next step, maybe two or three steps ahead. Sometimes you've got to pay to be in the room. I typically spend around 50 to 100K a year on masterminds and events and just being in the room. You know, they say you're the average of the five people that you spend the most time with. So if you think about that, think about your health, your spirituality, your finances, your career, all those things. And think about who you're around. If you want to be better in any area of your life, you've got to be around people that are better than you in those areas. And I think that that is the way to improve.
We mentioned earlier that I was an author, and we talked about it before we hopped on. My book is called The Epitome of the Mind. And it addresses everything that you're just saying, because I grew up in poverty, right? I grew up very poor, but no one handed me any kind of, I didn't get any money to do InvestFAR. I didn't do anything like that to raise. I just, you know, kind of just dove in. But The Epitome of the Mind talks about limiting beliefs. Majority of the people have these belief systems that were instilled in them as a kid or through their environment that makes them feel like they can't do whatever it is that somebody else is doing. And so that's kind of one of the things that we talk about in Epitome of the Mind. It addresses how to basically move yourself out of your own way so you can be successful. And that's kind of what I think people have a hard time with.
Yeah, no, that's it. And that's, if we can get out of our own way and just, you know, just do what we're here to do, it's amazing the opportunities, the potential that's there. So I think, you know, for most people, I think, you know, somebody listen to this, it's just, I think, figuring out, well, what is my dream? What do I want to do? And sometimes it even takes courage to say that or write that down or tell somebody about it. But once you say it or you do it, or you're, you know, again, like Tony Robbins, you decide, hey, this is not how it's going to be for me. Like a lot of times we can look at our lives and, like, I'm sure your life as well, you probably could have seen like, hey, you know, this is kind of where my life's going to go if I don't make some significant changes, right? And for me as well, I'm going to live this kind of life. I'm going to be around these kind of people, have this kind of income, this kind of health. And I had to say, okay, what areas here do I want to change? Well, to do that, I've got to take some pretty massive action. And I know, like you did, Andre, you had to get out of some mindsets that were very limiting to get there. Same with me. And I think for all of us, you know, some of us are raised with great parents that tell, hey, we can do anything, but we all face setbacks. We all face things that go on. And so how we encounter those things and we look at them as, hey, is this just simply a failure or is it a learning experience? Is it a seminar that gives opportunity to help us grow in the future? So just how we approach these things is so important. And I just think, like, God doesn't waste anything. Everything we have is always a lesson to learn and to grow. And so there's opportunity for that.
100%. So then with that being said, two things I want to ask. If you have any books, give us three books. I know you mentioned, you know, Robert Kiyosaki's book, but give us three books that help you get to where you are. And then the second question is, if you can give people that are in LA or traveling to LA, the name of that seminar that you're doing so people can attend, if it's an open thing for people to be able to show up to.
Sure. So books, I read a lot of books. I think I've read 60 books this year so far. So I try to read a ton. One book I love that I try to read every year is called Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. Former FBI hostage negotiator. It's very applicable to just about every area of life, of how we negotiate things and, you know, even walking across the street or talking with our spouse, all that's a negotiation. So how do we create win-win? So that's one. Another one that I love, anything by Brené Brown. Brené Brown's more personal development stuff, but there's a book called The Gifts of Imperfection. Probably my favorite book of all time. Just comes in, how do you live a wholehearted life to where you're free and you're joyful and you're able to really enter into gratitude and just really live from a place of being who you are. Those are a couple of big ones. And there's one other one by Robert Kiyosaki called Before You Quit Your Job. I can get into why I like that one, but I read that just as I was leaving my job, but it was so great. Just the mindset it takes to be able to leave your job. So if you're looking to leave your job, that book Before You Leave Your Job is a good one. And then the summit, it's called the Advanced Real Estate Investing Summit. The website is aresummit.com, aresummit.com. And just for your listeners here, we will give a 20% discount if you use the code SUMMIT20. So if you use the code SUMMIT20 at aresummit.com, this is going to be in Los Angeles, October 19th and 20th. Some big real estate speakers are going to be there. It's going to be for people who are interested in getting involved in passive investing or do different aspects of real estate. It's going to be phenomenal.
That sounds like something I need to be at for sure. So I'm pretty sure I'm bringing at least one or two people with me when I show up. So Brunson, awesome, man. This has been great. You gave a lot of jewels. So I hope the people that are listening see what you gave us just in this, you know, couple 30 minutes here and decide to show up, right?
Awesome, man. Thanks so much. Really appreciate being here, man. It was really great talking with you. Look forward to seeing you in person at the event. And thanks so much.
Thanks, Brunson.
Aren't you ready to start a business or grow your real estate investing portfolio? If you answered yes, allow Andre and the expert advisors at the Residual Roads Business Institute to fast track and put you on a path to full-time investing. The greatest transfer of wealth in our lifetime is occurring over the next few years, and you can take advantage if you know what to look for. In order to be successful at real estate investing, you need to learn how to leverage your current resources to generate quick money, big money, and retirement money. Let Residual Roads advisors craft a plan to get you through these phases using little or no money in 6 months or less. Don't wait for a job. Create one for yourself and others. Go to residualroads.com for mentorship, and for our free course, go to residualroads.thinkific.com.